All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland. I'm your host, Chauncey Hallworth. This is my co-host, Kara Kittrick. Kara, do you have any news for us today?
Yes, I do. So, a father of one of the Sandy Hook shooting victims is due to receive a settlement of $450,000 from the author of the conspiracy book, quote, No One Died at Sandy Hook, a volume in which the author, James Fetzer, makes the case that Sandy Hook was a hoax put on by the government to enact stricter gun control laws. In the book, he claimed that the father in question fabricated his son's death certificate. Similar suits have been ongoing against Alex Jones of InfoWars, who has also claimed that no one died at Sandy Hook. The book itself was pulled from the bookshelves over the summer with an apology from the publisher. In Hong Kong, protesters and police exchanged tear gas and firebombs as thousands participated in an illegal march. The protests began 4 months ago over a bill that would establish extradition back to the mainland in Hong Kong. However, the protests are not entirely about the bill. The protesters are overwhelmingly demonstrating in support of democracy. However, few expect the authoritarian Chinese government to cave before the movement does. Finally, Hillary Clinton has reminded us that she's not above the odd conspiracy theory herself, floating concerns that Tulsi Gabbard may be recruited by the Russians to run as a third-party candidate in 2020, splitting the Democratic vote and ensuring a Trump victory. I'm not making any predictions, but I think they've got their eye on somebody who is currently in the Democratic primary and are grooming her to be a third-party candidate, Clinton said in an interview. She's the favorite of the Russians. They have a bunch of sites and bots and other ways of supporting her so far, she appeared to mean Gabbard. Gabbard doesn't have different views than the other Democrats on much, with the notable exception that she was against the war in Syria from the start and in fact met with Bashar al-Assad in 2017, which would make her more favorable to the Russians from a foreign policy perspective. However, there does not appear to be any evidence that she will attempt a third-party run. I guess we'll see. Back to you, Chauncey.
All right, so it begins. It begins, it begins. You know...
Yes, it does.
It's all political from here on out. We're going to have a hard time getting any ghosts and big feet in the next coming months. You know, my wife and I, we were watching the...
If by coming months you mean literally more than a year.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, my wife and I, we were watching the first presidential debates, and we're thinking to ourselves, wow, 20 people, that's a lot. And then 10 people, we're thinking, wow, that's a lot. And for one, there's like some factoid that in the last 60 years, at this point in the election, the front runner has never actually won, meaning statistically, it's highly not going to be Biden. But
that's funny.
And then the other thing is we were thinking like, wow, you know, we've never seen so many candidates up there. And we found out that the reason why we've never seen so many candidates up there is this is the first year that this level has been televised. Normally, they don't even start televising this stuff until later.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we'd have to buy tickets if we were this interested, you know. I was talking to our friend Jake about it today, and he said it's like football drafts. You know, nobody cared about the first football drafts, and now people are treating it like it's March Madness. But historically, nobody really cared, you know.
No, it's true of so much in life that it's always been this way. We just see more of it now, you know.
Yeah.
There's so much more information available today. But
yeah, it just makes me wonder what we're picking, you know.
Yeah.
Why are we picking these instead of, you know, more superhero movies? You know, there's plenty of those. Watch those. So Sandy Hook, you know, how do you fake the death of children? I don't understand how you do that in the United States.
Well, there's a book about it.
Yeah, yeah. It's just so weird and so...
It's completely insane. I mean,
it is insane, but man, the cojones on these guys to be able to say this when they know that the person could show up at their doorstep or at their work and basically say, you know, these people are obviously just don't care how people feel as long as they make money off of selling food goo, post-apocalyptic food goo, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think this author or Alex Jones or anyone like that has ever believed the nonsense they're peddling. It's kind of just, you know, you got to take the money from the schizophrenics somehow. And
yeah, I don't know. I find
that's
it
what they're about.
I find it extra depressing because I like it when the nut jobs believe. You know, I find it enjoyable, but when they obviously don't,
right.
I can't stand it. You know, it's manipulative. But when they believe, I'm just all, okay, you know, I'll go along with this, you know. This person needs somebody to listen to them.
Yeah. Yeah, like, to be clear for our listeners, our problem with Alex Jones is not that he is crazy. It's that he's a sellout.
Right, yes, absolutely. That is absolutely my problem. People can't help crazy.
It's so true.
They can help being a sellout. And then Hong
they
Kong.
They should make medication for that.
Yeah. Hong Kong, man, these poor people, they are fighting a losing war for the right cause.
Yes, they are.
I don't see how they could possibly win.
No, me neither. And frankly, neither do they. You know, there's been plenty of interviews with the protesters and that sort of thing. And they basically said, yeah, we're not going to win this, but I like their philosophy, which is like that you still fight when there's a good reason to, regardless of the odds of victory, because, like, you know, not fighting is not better. It's
right.
Not going to help them. You know, this kind of thing may hopefully pave the way for real democracy, you know, decades down the line or something like that. That's kind of the best you can hope for.
And they may have stood a chance had the world got behind them, but it just shows how much money the free world has invested in China to
exactly.
The point where we're totally willing to back down. And we seem to be backing down across the board. You know, with the pullout from Turkey, I saw Mitt Romney, somebody who I don't normally agree with. His statement was basically, has the U.S. become so weak that we're willing to back down from a country like Turkey?
Yeah, well, to be fair, I think, you know, we live in a global economy. There's good reasons not to anger China. The Turkey thing was purely just, there was zero logic there. It was like, we can stand up to Turkey. We had that capability. We just...
Right, yeah. I don't know. I don't pretend to understand
random
all
reasons.
Right, I don't pretend to understand all of the foreign run-ins and stuff like that. I just
yeah. Well, no one understands why Trump ordered a hasty withdrawal from Turkey. This was a purely unilateral decision by him without the input of any of his advisors, like blindsided them, and Trump isn't particularly in the habit of explaining himself in a cogent way. So, like, we are probably never going to know what the reasoning was there exactly.
Right.
So, that's it.
You know, finally, we got about 1 minute up until break here, but finally, I got to say about Hillary Clinton, you know, in a world that elected Donald Trump, who likes these conspiracies and stuff like that, and I'm not coming down on him, I like conspiracies as well. It seems like all of a sudden now Hillary Clinton might just be presidential material after all, and she's support these conspiracies.
Yeah, she's finally learning.
Yeah, now she knows.
The voters literally do not care what is true.
Right.
So...
All right, well, we're coming up on break. You know, you're going to want to stick around. Our guest is Charles Christian. He's going to share some awesomely nostalgic, weird, dark tales with us, and you most certainly don't want to miss out on that here on Radio Wasteland.
listening to Free Fire Radio 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. You're listening to Radio Wasteland with Chauncey and Kara. Find all our shows and archives by visiting Radio Wasteland at radiowasteland.us.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest Charles Christian, urban myth and folklore author, as well as host of the Weird Tales radio show.
What does weird tales entail? You know, we live in this world of so many weird tales that it sort of has turned into ghost weird tales and so on and so forth, but my impression is that your weird tales are really trying to take it a step beyond to the weirdness in the weirdness.
Yeah, well, it's partly that. It's partly my experience that there are an awful lot of weird things going on in the world that actually life is stranger than fiction. And well, that's what intrigues me.
Yeah. Andrea, our girl who does the does our scheduling, she said that...
Andrea's a woman.
Andrea's a woman. Okay, well, I don't know. I'm not trying to insult her. She said that you were going to share three tales with us, and we have three segments in our show in between breaks, so without further ado, we should probably hop right into one, or we're going to lose track of our time. You know, why don't you just start us off and hit us with some weirdness?
Right, well, I suppose what I originally got interested in the weird was when I was a kid. I was of the age that grew up when, certainly in the UK, television wasn't all-pervasive. You know, broadcasting shut down at 10 o'clock at night. There was nothing much during the daytime. And it was still that era where over Christmas we'd sit round a log fire and in the dark or by candlelight and tell ghost stories and scare each other with tales. And obviously some of them were fictional ghost stories, but other ones were people telling their own real life encounters. And it intrigued me from then on. I suppose it's almost still in the oral tradition, and it started that way.
You know, that's Christmas is like my favorite holiday, of course, for somebody who does a paranormal show is Halloween, but Christmas is easily my second favorite because of all the darkness, and like if you listen to the old carols, I have to like tell people, I'm just all, oh yeah, ghost stories, they talk about them in all the old carols, but none of us, at least here, we don't do it at all anymore.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I say we did that, but the other factor was I lived a house I grew up in is an old. The origins are medieval, in a seaport town on the east coast of England, and it was one of those places that had strange cellars and doorways that didn't appear to lead anywhere and odd tunnels that were blocked up. I mean,
is that a type of
hindsight? With the benefit of hindsight, I realised it was because property had been sold and different bits had been hived off over the years, so it wasn't one integral property. But it was this intriguing property for a kid where you'd go down there, and I recall there was an entrance to a cellar that looked like a set of cupboards, and it hinged open, and there was this chasm beneath you of the old coal cellar. And up in the lofts, it was all old timbers, and they clearly been, because it was just right on the seafront by the harbour, it was utilised by, they'd added bits on with bits of old ship timber, and there was a tale that shipwrecked mariners used to be put up by one of my great grandmothers up in the loft, and supposedly on some nights you could hear still in their sea boots marching across the loft space, which is very cheering for a young kid, because that was right above my bedroom. So
yeah.
Gee, thanks, Dad.
Yeah, but I loved all that sort of stuff when I was a kid. You definitely, piqued up Kara's interest, you know, with the coal cellar and
that
all
sounds
that.
Eldritch.
Yeah.
That sounds just...
It is. It was... Elements of it were... it was like... Only later I realised it when I started reading stuff. But it's like living in an H.P. Lovecraft novel.
That's
his seaside settings. And the property definitely had non-Euclidean geometry in its layout. Yeah, it was very weird. And, you know, there were bits of old walls that were 3 feet thick that were on top of a new brick wall that was only 6 inches thick. And, very strange house. But as a my first real experience, and again it was one of those that only came out much later, at the time I accepted the explanation, and there was this sensation on some nights as if something was grabbing the bottom of my bed and giving it a shake, so the whole bed would shake from top to bottom, and it was enough to wake me up. And initially I thought, well, maybe it's my parents just checking that I'm asleep and nothing's happened to me overnight or anything. But they said, no, it wasn't them. And my father said, oh, it's just where the wind hits the house. Again, say it was a relatively exposed house on the seafront and the wind did hit it. But it was only years later it dawned on me that the bit of the house that stuck out where I was being hit by the wind, if the wind had hit it that way, it would have knocked me from side to side, if you like, in a direction. It couldn't have knocked me the way the bed was shaking.
Right.
Hmm. Which then sort of led me, years later, to think, well, what was it causing it? There were no other effects. There were nothing else sinister, just this strange something coming into something in the bedroom causing my bed to move from top to bottom, shaking me on a night. And as I say, it was quite a frequent incident. And as I say, looking back with a bit of hindsight, I realised that the explanation that it was the wind couldn't have been true, and I knew it wasn't my parents, and there was nothing else.
Right.
So what was it?
Yeah, that's wild. It was an upset seafaring coal stacker, coming from the creepy house that you were in. That is.
Well, exactly. And I say, my parents, I suppose, in those days, these were pre-Dr. Spock days, so you didn't sort of encourage children. You told them tales, which often terrified them.
Right.
So one day I was going out on my bicycle, on travelling off to see a friend and going up into the countryside nearby, and I happened to mention to my grandmother where I was going, and it was a place called Raincliffe Woods, that doesn't matter. And she says, oh, Raincliffe Woods. And she'd noticed I'd picked up an apple to take with me, bike. And she said, oh, I remember a tale from that. It was in the First World War. And so obviously, what was the story? And the story was a young soldier, home on leave from the war, had gone for a walk in the woods and had spotted something he was interested in, but slipped, fell down a bank, hit his head on a rock, and succumbed, whether to exposure or from the injuries. It's not exactly clear. And he was never found. Everybody thought he'd, you know, run away or whatever. And it was years later, somebody else was down there and noticed an apple tree growing. And they went down there, and there was a skeleton still with remnants of an old uniform on, with an apple tree growing up through the ribcage. And the story was, just like me, this young man had gone out there with an apple in his pocket, had a fatal accident, the apple had grown, and wow. Got thrown. Okay. So I thought, oh, yeah, thanks, Graham, that's a really cheery story.
Yeah, so, yeah, I love what you find to be nostalgic and fun today would be considered child abuse.
Well,
it is,
exactly.
Yeah, very funny.
You are listening to our guest Charles Christian here on Radio Wasteland. You can find out more about Charles at urbanfantasist.com. And, stick around, come on back, because we have more Weird Tales with Charles Christian.
The Society of Animal Artists' 62nd Annual Art and the Animal Exhibition is now at Turtle Bay Museum, featuring art in various media from artists around the world. Art and the Animal at Turtle Bay Museum. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
Hi, this is Elle. Join me and my good friend and co-host Ron Lim for our new show, Ask Elle, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, every Tuesday night at 6 p.m. starting in September. We'll be exploring powerful topics on how to have a successful and satisfying relationship. See you here Tuesday nights at 6 p.m.
Brought to you by Carlene's and Deja Vu Restaurants.
Have you just received your Starlink? Congratulations! Do you need help installing it? Look no further than your local satellite professionals. That's right, BT Satellite. Call Doug and the whole team to set up your Starlink with the same customer service you've come to know. BT Satellite will set up your Starlink and work with you to make the experience a pleasure for you. Call today and set up your time to install the new Starlink. You know, don't call the 800 number. Call 241-3474. That's BT Satellite, 241-3474.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Shasta Regional Medical Center presents Magnificent Me at Turtle Bay Museum, now through January 29th. This highly interactive museum exhibition explores the science of the human body, great for all ages. Magnificent Me at Turtle Bay Museum. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Radio Wasteland comes to you from the Reading studios of Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM and AM 1460.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest Charles Christian.
Man, I'm really loving these stories, Charles. They're just awesome and sort of beautifully dark. You know, they're nostalgically dark, and they're just really 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 great. Do you have another one for us?
Yes. Well, I mean, as would happen, when I went to university, college, you'd call it, I used to go on ghost hunting expeditions. I mean, very, very amateurish by modern standards. I'd have a notebook and a friend of mine, would have a camera and we'd have a couple of flasks of coffee and we'd go out to where ghosts were meant to be seen to see if we could see anything happening. And so I spent a sizable amount of time freezing to death in various graveyards across the north of England, waiting for ghosts that never arrived, or hoping actually, well, you know, it'd be good if we did see the ghost, but on the other hand, what if we did see the ghost? That would be worrying. And so we had a number of stakeouts. One of the more fascinating ones, I thought, was a thing called the St. Mark's Eve ritual. I don't know if you've heard of this one, but this is that on St. Mark's Eve, if you wait in a churchyard, you will see, I suppose they'd be doppelgangers, of all the people in that parish who are going to be buried in that churchyard over the coming 12 months.
Oh.
And you see their spirits supposedly enter the church. And if the spirit then comes back out of the church, that means they're going to be very seriously ill. But they're going to recover. They don't come back. Then they're doomed to die. And in the north of England, it was a tradition of porch watching. You'd sit in the church porch and wait to see who went through, with obviously various tales of people seeing themselves going through, which
right.
is not good news. And as I say, we did that and we saw nothing, but we realised we'd made a basic error that they were no longer burying people in that graveyard, so it was a bit academic. So
right.
Missed out in a sort of schoolboy error there. We didn't quite do our homework.
Well, that explains why you didn't see anything, though.
Yeah, exactly. But I say, but you know, up there, I went to university in a town city called Leeds in North England, and visited a graveyard there, and there is a very large, very elaborate Edwardian era, you know, the what do you call it, the golden decade, you know, just before the First World War, that period.
Mm.
Right. And it is a huge, it's a life-size replica of a front door, and it's partly ajar, and there's a life-size replica of a woman carved in marble standing there. And she's known as Ethel at the Gate. And the tomb was built by her husband, and it was supposedly because back in the day, he'd be working in the city, and they lived out of the town, out of the city, and she'd be waiting at the door for him to come back. And it was how he remembered her, the devoted wife. But it soon became apparent, not least the fact that he married a showgirl a few months after her death, that he was a womanizer, and actually the reason he was back late was out, he was going with showgirls, and was totally unfaithful, so it was really a big guilt trip. But in the twilight, seeing it is a particularly spooky scene, particularly now as trees have all grown around it, that it, in a graveyard, a full-size effigy of a woman in white. And curiously, over the last couple of years, flowers have started appearing and being left by this tomb. So nobody knows quite who, because the family all since died out. So I say that was a particularly one, you know, coming around a corner in a cemetery and suddenly seeing this in the twilight. But I suppose our most interesting one was in a village we went to, where there was one of the few people, you remember in the, well, you don't remember obviously, but you know, in the Salem witch trials, that one of the witnesses refused to give any evidence, and so he was crushed to death. They had this thing, if you wouldn't plead guilty or not guilty, they would press you until you either said, yeah, I'll talk, or I don't talk. And the particular character in the Salem witch trials, and say, can't remember his name off the top of my head, he suffered this fate and supposedly cursed everybody in Salem who did it to him. And lo and behold, within 12 months, three of the people who persecuted him had died. So that goes on. But there was a similar one in England, and this is what we were looking after, and it was a person who, again, with hindsight, we now know, had clearly had a mental breakdown and
right.
Lost his mind, and stabbed his wife, didn't kill her, but injured her, killed his children, killed their nurse, and then rode off into the night to kill another child, but his horse stumbled and fell on him, and so he was arrested. And he was brought for trial, and he knew that he knew he was no good pleading not guilty, because the evidence was such that he'd done it. And he also knew that if he pleaded guilty, then his property would be confiscated, and his wife and remaining child would lose their inheritance and become homeless. So he opted not to plead at all. So he was put under the same torture.
Right.
Large wooden doors and packed with weights. And supposedly his last words were, "More weight, more weight," and he died.
Yeah, that's funny.
And the story is that he's buried in this churchyard now, presumably in a very, very wide, flat grave, I'm assuming, that he still...
That's terrible.
I know. Maybe they rolled him up like a carpet. I don't know.
No. Who needs the carpet to dispose of that body? That's funny.
That he rides round on the eve of the anniversary of his death. He rides around the churchyard on a horse, shouting "Ligon, Ligon," which is sort of Yorkshire dialect for "more weight, put more weight on."
Right.
And I say we went to see whether anything happened, but again, we didn't see anything. However, it's one of those where there is a story, because there's a school next to the church, and there is a tale that in the 19th century, some schoolboys used to do a ritual, and they, on their way home from school, they'd stand by the churchyard, put all their school caps in a pile on the ground, dance round it anti-clockwise, and sing a little chant saying, "Old Sir Walter, old Sir Walter, come out and show yourself. If we not, we'll have you for collops," which is sort of slices of ham. Anyway, schoolboy bravado.
Right.
And then, after you've done that, you blow through the keyhole of the church door and see what happens. And the story is supposedly that one day the ghost did appear, and all the kids the next day were in school, they'd lost their caps, they'd run away, their hair had turned white, and say that's a nice bit of legend that is still recited as being true, that they actually did invoke Sir Walter's ghost.
Right.
Awesome. As I say, my ghost story is, you know, we did a lot of it, but we never saw anything. But I think that's probably the way with a lot of ghost hunting, that it's more by luck than judgment that you actually see anything where you go to a place that is reputed to be haunted.
You are listening to our guest Charles Christian here on Radio Wasteland. You can find out more about Charles at urbanfantasist.com. And, stick around, come on back, because we have more Weird Tales with Charles Christian.
Goldleaf Nursery Autumn Harvest of Savings Sale is going on now. A huge 50% off sale of shrubs and trees in a selected area of the parking lot. A great time to pick out fall color trees and shrubs. And the rest of the entire inventory is 20% off. This sale runs until November 19th. Coming soon, a truckload of living Christmas trees, including Colorado blue spruce, fir trees, and a hard-to-get Japanese maple and dogwood. Goldleaf Nursery is open Wednesday through Saturday from 8 to 5. Don't miss Goldleaf Nursery's Autumn of Savings Sale. Goldleaf Nursery at 6168 Churn Creek Road across from the Tucker Oaks Golf Course.
The tradition continues at the Dry Creek Station at 22025 Highway 299 East in Bella Vista, featuring delicious steaks and seafood, chicken, soups, salads, and much more. The Dry Creek Station, family-owned and operated, open since 1992, serving dinner Tuesday through Sunday from 5 to 9 p.m., with happy hour from 3 to 5, and don't miss their fantastic weekend specials. The Dry Creek Station at 22025 Highway 299 East in Bella Vista. So come on down to the Dry Creek Station, where quality and value meet.
You're listening to Chauncey and Kara on Radio Wasteland right here on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. That's Free Fire Radio. And don't forget to follow Radio Wasteland on Facebook at facebook.com/radiowasteland.us.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest Charles Christian, urban myth and folklore author, as well as host of the Weird Tales radio show.
I was very similar when I was a kid. I was very just sort of interested in the weird stuff. You know, all the normal stuff was normal. I understood that stuff pretty quickly. It was the weird stuff that got my imagination going.
I mean, my father, who he definitely had a bit of a weird view on upbringing. He once told me, I was, say, living on the sea front, and you could go along the beach and onto an area of rocks and rock pools and things, and you could always find, you know, for a kid, there's always plenty of things, you know, fossils or bits of interesting old bits of metal or all manner of things. You know, that thing you do where you see a stone in the water, it looks all shiny. You think, oh, I found a ruby or something, and you get it home and it dries out. It's just a bit of brick.
Right.
But anyway, he said, if you're going on that area, he said, always make sure you carry a sharp knife with you. And again, this is nowadays, certainly in the UK, where they're obsessed with knife crime. We tend to forget that kids in the 50s, we all have pocket knives and sheath knives and things that, you know, get arrested if you went out with them today. Anyway, so I said, yeah, I always have a knife with me. Why? And he said, well, and then he came out with his tale. And it was, again, one of his schoolmates, when he was at school, had gone out there on the rocks one day, and he'd put his hand into a rock pool because he thought there was something interesting in there, and it had been grabbed by a conger eel. His hand. Now, conger eels, they've got a set of teeth that are a bit like the xenomorph in the Alien. You know, they can clutch.
It just gets worse and worse.
They've got a way that once you're caught by one, you don't get your hand out.
Right.
And they can also do this thing that they can blow up their body, swell it out, so they're in a rock hole and they can sort of waste themselves in there. So, you know, the story was, the poor kid was trapped there, the tide came up, and he drowned, and they found him the next day. And I said, so I take the knife then, so that if I'm trapped, I can stab the conger eel and escape. And my father looked at me and said, no, it's so you can cut your hand off and escape.
Oh, boy.
And once again, you think that, and you think, who as a kid would have the strength and the mentality to do it, and besides which, the loss of blood and the shock would kill you anyway.
Well, I have to admit that you're now hitting my level of parenting. When my kids were young and they would hurt themselves, they would feel, oh, I hurt my hand, and they'd be freaking out, and I'd be, oh, do you want me to cut it off so it doesn't hurt anymore? And they'd be, oh, no, I'm fine. And like, So I think I'm guilty of that one.
They were quickly trained to ignore pain.
Yeah.
They're now the perfect killing machine.
Yeah, they were. But that is funny, yeah. Go ahead.
But I say that's how you start off, and you only realize later in life what these influences have clearly had on them, and that you possibly end up thinking differently, but you have this intrigue with odd stuff, weird stuff.
Right.
And, you know, it builds on from there.
Well, I hope I, you know, gave my kids some of that. I hope I didn't give them any trauma, but I hope I gave them a little skew on their view of the world.
You know? I don't know that it's possible to parent without a little bit of trauma.
Yeah, no matter what, we all damage our kids somehow. You know?
Yeah.
There's all going to come that conversation in the 30s where we have to decide who's going to pay for their counseling, me or them. You know, whose fault is it?
Yeah.
You know.
I say, sadly, we didn't have time for my the time I was commissioned by a couple of years ago by a national newspaper in the UK to go on a werewolf hunt.
Yeah, I saw that on your website. It said you were a sometimes werewolf hunter.
Let's get this story, because I want to know.
Right. Well, the story is, the background is, I wrote a book about the folklore of an area of England called the Yorkshire Wolds, hilly area, and one of the features of the folklore is that 1,000 years ago there were reports that there was a werewolf in the area, and that it would come down with other wolves and it would attack people, eat them, drag them away, that it lived in a tomb somewhere, that it change shape so it could frequent among men during the day. Now, that area was known to be frequented by werewolves, but it's an by proper wolves. But it's an intriguing story because werewolves aren't really part of English folklore. They're exceptional. In fact, this is the only one for about 1,000 years. And it was known as Old Stinker, because it had a breath that smelled of carrion. Now, I happened to put that in the book. And then, about a year or so after the book came out, there were reports in a city called Hull, which was only about 20 miles away from where the werewolf in historical times was living. And people were saying there was a werewolf haunting a part of the town. And the local newspaper, who knew I'd written the earlier book, contacted me. And I said, well, sounds like Old Stinker has come back from the undead and is now moved a bit further south. And so in due course, it spread and it became in that area, and then went onto social media, and there were lots of stories about medieval werewolf now hunting, now haunting this town. It was picked up by all manner of newspapers and things, and eventually I got asked if I'd like to go on an actual werewolf hunt on the night of a full moon on the area where the werewolf was seen, said this creature was said to be seen acting, and people were saying, you know, we saw it dragging a dog away, and we've seen all these, it's got red eyes and it's crashing through the undergrowth. And so myself and my wife and a cameraman and a guy from a newspaper, we went out at midnight along this rather spooky overgrown towpath with a little canal down the middle of it where the wolf had been seen. Point where we were having our photographs taken in the churchyard to go with it. My wife said to me, remind me again why I'm here and how this happened.
Yeah, anyway, that's how mine would feel.
Yeah. And we went down there, and lo and behold, on the other side of this ditch was a creature. You could just see it had two very large orange eyes. They were separated quite a long way, so it was a big creature, and it was making its way through the undergrowth opposite where we were. And fortunately, there was a stream between us and a culvert, and we shone our torches on it. We still couldn't work out what it was, but normally when you do something like that, the animal will duck away and hide. But this didn't. It kept following us along the track, and then it disappeared. So, what was it? Had we actually encountered the werewolf? Or, as I suspect more likely, it was probably a very large dog that someone had let loose because it had got too unmanageable and had turned feral and was hunting along that area. But I say, that's how I ended up as a member of the werewolf hunting club.
I wonder how big that club is.
Well, you don't see any werewolves in Britain.
A lot of members.
So.
Yeah.
They must be doing their job. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, we're here at the end of the interview, but, man, I'm not sure how much interviewing went on. That was just... I'm totally enthralled by these stories. You know, when I was a kid, I would check out books of ghost stories. I liked the short anthologies where I could, you know, turn through a lot of them and stuff like this. This is definitely one of my loves in life, without a doubt. Where can our audience find out more about you and find out where to get your stuff?
You can find my website, which is urbanfantasist.com, and that has links to everything and to the books I'm working on and the podcasts I do and everything else I do. I am writing a book about the folklore of the area I now live in as well, so that'll be out sometime next year.
And I really appreciate you being on the show, and I would love to have you on again. Kara and I very much enjoyed it.
Yeah.
These conversations. Absolutely great.
Well, thank you, Chelsea. And, we'll speak again.
All right. Sounds good.
Have a good day.
You too.
Take care.
You too. All right. You've been listening to Charles Christian here on Radio Wasteland. Thank you for checking us out.
Retirement may seem to be in the distant future, or it may suddenly arrive overnight. At Stifel Investments, we are committed to working closely with our clients. Planning tomorrow means understanding the challenges of today. Uncertain markets, rising costs, and longer lifespans. As a financial advisor of 25 years, I'm committed to helping my clients achieve retirement success. Let's get started today. This is Susan Eastman, Stifel Nicholas & Company, 244-7199.
Moment in History by KCNR Radio. In February 1850, Shasta County was created as one of the California's original 27 counties. In September of that same year, California was admitted into the Union, meaning that Shasta County was even older than the state of California. Before Shasta County was named, Shasta residents held a town meeting.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.